UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome back to Franchise Fatigue, the podcast of the United Federation of Podcast Network, where your hosts go through movies, remakes, and sequels. I'm your host, Brandon Smith, and joining me, as always, is my ever-constant co-host, Zach Moore. Zach, you're looking way older than you should.
We missed you.
We missed you. Excellent. We're excited to be discussing this fourth movie in the Matrix franchise, and we couldn't do it without our good friend Marcelo J. Pico. Marcelo, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing very well. Not going to say whether I'm a program or a real person. You're just to figure that out on your own.
Yes.
You're to choose.
Well, it's good to have you back discussing The Matrix.
Oh, I'm excited. Hey, we'll get into it, but I'm very excited to be back for this. Oh, boy. You have no idea. Boy.
Excellent. Right on. Well, that makes one of us.
So, Oh, no. Should have started drinking earlier. All right.
Right on. Okay, so we're here discussing The Matrix. I saw it twice. I did manage to squeeze in a second seeing of the film here before we decided. I'm glad that I did. I'm glad I got a second viewing in because it did help solidify some of the thoughts and questions that I had on the film. I went to the movie theater to see this. So, Marcelo, where did you go to see this? Did you HBO Max this or did you go to the theater?
Both. I've seen this twice now. First time I saw this was at a press screening about 2 weeks ago now. I was one of the lucky few to see this early and had my opinions on it, which I'll get into more as we go along. But I rewatched it when it came out on HBO Max yesterday. And yeah, I'll just say with this movie, every watch helps. I liked it a lot more the second time. Mm-hmm. First time, I'll admit, it's kind of lost. But yeah, I think for me, a rewatch solidifies this for me as being a very good movie. So yeah, I'm excited it's on HBO Max because like now, hey, nowadays, you know, getting to the theater probably isn't like as safe as it seemed. Even like 2 weeks ago, but now on HBO Max, I'm happy just to see this over and over again as many times as possible the next 30 days. So yeah, that's my answer to your question. I've seen it twice now.
So you say 30 days, is it only going to be on HBO Max for 30 days?
Yeah, because I know it's different up in Canada, but in the US with HBO Max releases, I think this is the last one actually that's doing this simultaneous theaters and HBO Max deal. But yeah, it'll like a lot of these for Warner Brothers, it'll be on HBO Max for 30 days. And then after that, like VOD, and then, yeah, physical media. So, yeah, that's the rollout for this movie here.
Yeah, we'll probably get it on video on demand or something. But we don't have it on anything right now. Like, we have to go to the theater in Canada. So
that's terrible.
It's not streaming. Like, it's not on our Crave. Like, I think when Justice League came out there, whatever service was on, I think it was on HBO Max there. Like, it was on Crave here in Canada.
Yeah, but
it's not on Crave here. And I couldn't get it on Apple to watch it. So I had to go to the theater to see it. So, how about you, Zach? How did you see this bad boy?
I watched it on HBO Max.
HBO Max. Excellent. Right on. And how was that for you? Was it like going to the theater? Did you have popcorn and stuff?
I just watched it on HBO Max.
On your cell phone.
On my phone as I went to sleep. No, I watched it on a screen HBO Max. So. Good. Excellent.
Right on. You know, when I went to the theater, like, so I'm in Saskatchewan, right? And as we go into the Omicron variant, ours is the only province that did not implement any type of gathering restrictions whatsoever because our province just doesn't care. That said, my theater was surprisingly not full. It was like, if it was a third, I would be amazed. It was, even if it was a quarter, I'd probably be amazed. Like, it was pretty empty in that theater, which I was very, very surprised because it was opening night, you know, for The Matrix. So I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, so. I'm in Texas, Austin, Texas. And of course, they're not going to have any new restrictions here because it's a terrible state. But I had to cancel my tickets for Wednesday. I was going to see it with a friend. And as, you know, the days progressed, and with the Omicron, like, it changes on a dime, we both decided to not go see this opening night. And it was going to be a packed house. That's why we said no. Because here in Austin, I mean, there's a packed house for, like, especially at the Draft House, at the Alamo Draft House. Like, opening nights are usually crowded, even if it's, like, House of Gucci. It's like a packed house. So we decided to avoid the crowds. And I will probably see this again in a theater. You know, in the next few days I have time, but I'm choosing a screening that's like not going to be packed. Cause yeah. Best to avoid crowds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right on. Well, Zach, do you want to jump right into the trivia on Back to the Matrix Resurrections?
Yes. The Matrix Resurrections is the title of the film. You would think it's Back to the Matrix. If you're listening to Brandon, you think that's the title of the film. But
I watched the wrong movie. This should still be called The Matrix Rebooted. I still stand firmly that this should be called Matrix Rebooted. So,
or 2.0.
Yeah, or 2.0, yeah.
Or actually 7.0 if you follow the chronology of the series, I think. But anyway, let's get into the trivia. So according to Lana Wachowski, her decision to bring back Neo in Trinity for the sequel was inspired by the loss of both her parents, who only died 5 weeks apart, and a close friend who had also passed away. And the writing process was a way of comforting herself in the face of losing these loved ones. And the opposite was the case for Lily Wachowski. That was part of her decision not to return to the franchise. She didn't want to relive these feelings of loss through, you know, writing these characters. So, you know, siblings, but different points of view on the creative process and working through grief. So that's why there's only one Wachowski attached. All the other ones had both Wachowskis. So unlike the first two sequels, there was no second unit for any of the action sequences. Lana Wachowski directed all of the scenes. Ooh. So there was no second unit. And speaking of how they shot it, this is the first Matrix film, ironically, to be shot digitally. The first three were shot on Super 45. So The Matrix is now a digital film. Mm-hmm. And this is the first film of the Matrix series that doesn't have cinematographer Bill Pope. He didn't return, nor did Don Davis, who did the score for the first three films. Although you hear some of the themes sometimes. Now, when they were shooting in San Francisco, they irritated a lot of the residents there and the city workers because they damaged a lot of buildings and streetlights, which a lot of films have been doing lately. Apparently, Shang-Chi, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, people have just been destroying the streets of San Francisco. I don't know what the deal is there, but they had to pay $420,000 to the San Francisco Police Department so they could film the city. So, but add that to the budget.
Hmm. That's funny. Like the friend who I was going to go see this with the other night, she knew about the Matrix filming in San Francisco because her home work office is in San Francisco, and I believe the building they jump off of in this movie is the same building her work is located, headquartered. So that's a funny coincidence. But yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. So they actually had to halt production on March 16th, 2020. For a little thing called COVID-19. You guys might be familiar with it.
Never heard of it.
But that was like 2 years ago. So, you know, I'm sure you've all forgotten about it by now. But they had to delay the release a few times, too. We can talk about that. But they actually had to delay production until November 11th, 2020. So that's quite a big gap there. But that was, you know, the height of the pandemic, and that's what they had to deal with. It. And with that in mind,
was it at the height of the pandemic?
That, well, I guess that's all relative nowadays.
But, sorry,
that was at a height.
A height. So the original release date for The Matrix 4 was going to be May 21st, 2021. And at the time, that was actually going to come out the same day as John Wick Chapter 4, also starring Keanu Reeves. So that was, I always thought that was a very strange release there for both those films. Like, what are you competing against, the same exact audience? I mean there are pros and cons for that, I guess. It makes me think of when Batman versus Superman was going to come out the same day as Captain America Civil War.
Yeah,
DC blinked on that one. That was the right call.
We'll never know which one of those blinked or was going to blink if there was no pandemic, if they're both going to come out the same day, you know, or if things were different. But yeah, I knew one of them was going to eventually blink. There's no way two Keanu movies from like those two huge franchises were going to open the same weekend. There's no way.
Ironically, the fourth entry in both. So, the Matrix Resurrections, it was postponed until April 1st. Then, of course, the pandemic kept going, and so then it was eventually postponed until December 22nd, with a simultaneous release in theaters and on HBO Max. And that was, you know, as we had briefly mentioned before, Warner Brothers is releasing their big movies on HBO Max this year in the year 2020. And this is apparently going to be the last movie this happens in. We'll see. But Warner Brothers has stayed pretty fast about, like, we're not doing this anymore after next year. You know, we saw Dune and Godzilla vs. Kong and all these movies come out on HBO Max this year. And instead, they're going to have a 45-day exclusive theatrical window that a lot of studios are participating in. And that's going to be the format of the releases next year. So this was the last HBO Max day in digital release. So, and as a member of HBO Max and subscriber, I've been very happy with this. I've been able to see a lot more movies a lot more conveniently. I'm not gonna lie.
Zach, let me ask you a question. What device do you stream HBO Max on?
I have a Flexbox from Xfinity.
Flexbox, interesting. Yeah. Do you have any problems with the HBO Max app?
You know, a lot of people have problems with it. I hear. Yeah. Like, I really don't have. Every now and then something gets out of sync, I gotta refresh. But honestly, I haven't had that many problems. But I know a lot of people that do not like the interface or the playback options on there. Yeah. Sounds like you might have some issues, Marcelo.
No, I actually don't have any issues because, like, I have heard the same problems from other people, playback issues and whatnot. And my HBO Max app on my Apple TV 4K plays just fine. It's my other. I have two Apple TVs. My Apple TV regular, my HD Apple TV. That one has HBO Max app problems. But I'm interested, just out of curiosity's sake, I ask anybody who has HBO Max app, like, what do you stream it on? Because in my head, I'm doing like a, you know, I'm trying to remember like which ones it doesn't work on, just for my own sake. There's no real reason. I'm just interested. Yeah.
No, it's strange because I know other people have HBO Max, and I don't hear people complaining about it a lot in my everyday life. But you go online, it's like, oh my god, this is the worst streaming service. That's not, I'm like, oh, I don't know.
That's fine with me. I'm lucky I have an Apple TV then. Yeah.
So back to the Matrix. You like that, Brandon? I said
I love it.
The thing. Okay. So Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, Jada Pinkett Smith, Daniel Bernhardt, Clayton Wilson, and Lambert Wilson are the only cast members to return. Clayton Watson, I should say. Clayton Watson, who played the kid in the original trilogy, he is back in an uncredited role. So I think he's just in the background somewhere. I didn't catch him, but apparently he's in the film.
Wow. Well, this is the first I'm hearing of it.
I think it was on the screen. It was a photograph of when they saw Michael Myers escape, and they put his picture up on the screen.
I see. I understood that reference.
I think you're thinking of the wrong movie, but yeah.
Speaking of Halloween Kills, I saw that on Peacock on my Flexbox. So hashtag it's all connected. So but I get it. Peacock came with my Flexbox, which comes from Infinity, which is owned by Universal, Comcast. It's all. You know,
collaborations
are the future. So anyway,
more of that later.
yes. So the Wachowskis wrote and directed Sense8, and a lot of actors and actresses that appeared in that appear in this. We have Brian J. Smith, Max Reimelt, Edrina Ibarra, Freema Agyeman, Max Moff, and Toby Onamure, and they're all in the Matrix Resurrections. They're all in Sense8. Hugo Weaving was apparently originally approached to reprise his role as Agent Smith, but he turned it down due to scheduling conflicts with other films and projects. Just brief aside, I would have loved Hugo Weaving in this. I think his presence is missed. But I think if he would have reprised the role, they would have had to do something a little different than with that character, right?
I think so. It's interesting because, not to dive too far into it, but I mean, I liked Jonathan Groff in it, and it's interesting to see some of these roles portrayed by other people, but I totally see where you're coming from. Like, if they end up doing another one of these, I do hope he comes back in some way. But yeah, I guess we'll get into it later. But Hugo Weaving, I mean, I can't think of him and not think of Agent Smith, so it was hard to make that separation with this one.
Yeah, I couldn't see him as dude bro tech company owner with his t-shirt
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just wouldn't have worked. Hello, yeah. Tom.
Although that would have been a take. That would have been something I think we even could have like really slinked into. Mm-hmm. But yeah, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll get into that. Like, it's weird because I'll hold my thoughts till we get to the discussion. Yeah,
that was kind of a loaded question to ask during the trivia. I know.
Let's finish the trivia. Let's finish the trivia.
So Tiffany's husband Chad was played by Chad Skaleski, and he was the stunt coordinator and stand-in for Keanu Reeves in the original trilogy, and he's also a director of the John Wick films. So there you go. So there is some. And a movie that is very interested in being meta, that's very meta, that Trinity is married to Neo's stunt double from the original trilogy.
I believe he is the person who, like, first leaked the info that Lana was coming back for Matrix 4. I seem to remember that story, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's him that kind of broke it for everybody.
Was kind of an undercover sequel, wasn't
it? Yeah. I think it was for press for John Wick 3 that he just let it slip out. Oh, yeah, we're doing... you know, action, you know, training for Matrix 4, whatever, and Lana's back. And then it was like, whoa, wait, what? And then he had to retract it and everything, but yeah. I seem to remember that was the case.
Now, there's a shot of Neo in the street. There's a sign that says Corky's Massage Spa and Salon. And Corky was a lead character in the Wachowskis film Bound, played by Gina Gershon, who had a Labyrinth tattoo on her arm, and a Labyrinth icon also appears on that sign. So self-referential meta, that's what this movie's all about. So that's a little Easter egg for everybody there. Priyanka Chopra, who plays the grown-up Satie, she had to recite all of her lines of dialogue in front of the entire cast on the first day of their shoot in Berlin, because there was a sunset, a very authentic sunset that was happening that they wanted to capture for coverage. So she said that session lasted about 45 minutes and it completely exhausted her because she had to do her entire monologue at the end when they're out there. And I get it. Right? You wanted to capture that you know, golden hour natural sunset, but that's a lot of pressure to put on an actor there on the first day of the shoot there. So
yo, wowzers.
Yeah, I've heard, I'm not sure if you're going to touch more on this, Zach, but I've heard a lot about that, about Lana's like, sort of like not improvised sort of shooting, but like sort of shooting, like waiting for sunsets, waiting for like the right time in, you know, right place where the sun is to shoot something, kind of like spur of the moment sort of shots. And yeah, that doesn't surprise me. But hey, there's some beautiful shots in this.
So the big jump they do of the 44 Montgomery Street building in San Francisco, right? That was mostly accomplished without CGI effects. So the building is officially 43 stories high, but they had to climb another two or three floors to reach the rooftop. And Keanu Reeves and Carrie-Anne Moss made the jump about 20 times over a two-day period with a body descender cable attached to them. So no CGI here, just cable removal.
I crap my pants if I had to do that for a movie.
It's not the life for you, Brandon.
Nope.
I've seen the footage, the behind the scenes footage of that. It's incredible. I'm happy how it looks in the movie, and it does look real. So yeah, I liked it.
Now the What Is the Matrix website came back online in October of this year, advertising the film, and it had the choose your reality section. Visitors chose the red pill or the blue pill, and they got unique teasers for this film, and there were approximately or exactly 2,880 variations of the teaser trailer for this film, which is insane to me, but very micro changes. I'm sure you probably couldn't even tell two apart. But
Marcelo,
cool.
Did you watch all of those trailers?
No. Don't ask me how many times I clicked on the button and watched a different trailer. Don't ask me that. At least 100 times. So no, I did not see them all.
I hope they're all featured on the home video release.
The Blu-ray.
Our six-disc bonus feature with five discs of trailers.
It's your Matrix Resurrections loop. You have all the teaser trailers
on. I think
on.
They could fit it on like one 4K disc, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, come on.
Seamless branching, right? That would
exactly.
Take.
Yeah.
Just. And then finally, at 148 minutes, this is the longest Matrix film yet in the franchise.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually hoping this is a hit, because I do want to see more, which we'll get to later. My thoughts on whether this is... This should be worthy of a franchise yet again. But yeah, I mean, I just should look at the numbers because, like, normally I just ignore box office numbers. But for stuff like this, I'm like, yeah. And also, it's Lana Wachowski. I want her to have a hit. It's been a while, but she's definitely had hits in my heart since the beginning. But anyway.
So let's start off with, I want to start off with the look of the film, because this looks very different than the previous three films. Like, it's very vibrant, lots of really bright colors, which we didn't really get in the first three. And the digital photography, I think, makes a drastic difference, because we go back and forth with footage from the first three films. There's some footage interspersed in the movie.
Oh, is there?
Oh, is there? There's a little bit of it. I mean, like, there's at least an hour worth of footage from the previous films in this movie, right?
Marcel's, it's an exaggeration.
A little bit. But I don't know. Like, I think it's a really beautiful... This movie is gorgeous. This movie is absolutely gorgeous. The colors are vibrant. The picture quality looks amazing. And I don't know. Like, I was in love visually with this movie. I thought it looked wonderful. Marcel, what'd you think?
I'm in agreement with you. It's striking in how it's different from the last three. It's got a new cinematographer, John Toll. But apparently the story is John Toll, who I'm looking him up right now just to remember, because I'm bad with names. I mean he did Braveheart, Legends of the Fall. He won Academy Awards for both of those. I mean, he's a legendary cinematographer. But the story that I heard about this is that he did work for some of it, and because of COVID, he couldn't get to the set as often as he wanted to. So that's why Danielle Mascarese, and I can't pronounce that name. That's why he is also credited, because he did, I think, 50%, if not more, of the work. But both of them together, it's amazing. And then, like I said earlier, Lana Wachowski's shooting style was like to wait for sunsets, to wait for the right, with magic hour, that's the term. And I think just patience. And then Ken also said the same thing, like they were waiting for just natural light to come in for certain shots. And I think that shows. It's striking. I think it's supposed to be striking compared to the other three. And yeah, overall, I think it's a lovely looking picture. And I didn't have that in mind, that whether they shot this on film or not, because sometimes I'm like, oh, that obviously looks like digital. I can't help but like focus on that aesthetic. But with this, I was like, I don't, you know, it looking at it now, I have it in the background as I always do. Like, you know, when they cut to like the trilogy shots, you do see that difference like between film and digital. But when I'm just watching the movie on its own, like the digital look doesn't stand out and doesn't make it seem, you know, visually as like displeasing as like the other footage. But yeah, I like it.
I kind of want to find out the story on this Danielle Mascarese, because I just, while we were talking, I'm on Letterboxd looking up, and this person has only got 4 credits to their name, and the last one before Matrix was 1993.
Wow. Yeah. I should have done more research. I did some quick research on him, but he's the son of a renowned photographer / cinematographer, who I also think he also did like pornography too, his father. So, and I think Danielle also did work as like assistant camera and like, you know, second unit stuff for like other Wachowski films, and I think Sense8 too. So it's on the family with like the Wachowskis and who they work with. And I think he is one of those that they brought along, you know, after Sense8. I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the three films have a total combined logged views on Letterboxd of 24. All three of those previous films too combined. Anyways, just interesting. So, Zach, what'd you think of the look of the film?
I thought it looked pretty good.
You're not as enthused as we are.
I was gorgeous,
just,
man.
I mean, I was too distracted by the story, which was no good in my opinion, but...
Okay, so shots let's fired. Jump into that. Shots fired. Okay, so... I don't know. I don't even know where to start with this. Okay, so I got a lot of problems with this film. Okay, I tried. I was like really looking forward to this movie, and all that I have written down here is questions. on the film here. So, Marcelo, hey,
maybe I can answer them.
I am so happy that you are here, Marcelo. You have no idea how happy I am that you are here, okay?
Can I open? Okay, I'm going to be the most positive person on this recording, it sounds like, okay?
That's correct.
I love this. I wasn't sure the first time. I had questions, and then I saw this again yesterday. Fully convinced this is as good as the sequels. I mean, as good as Reloaded and Revolutions, which I said on the show previous that Matrix is a 5 out of 5. Reloaded Revolutions, I said, was 4.5 out of 5. And this one, I can for sure, right now, I can exclaim and say it's a 4.5 out of 5, same as the other two. So that's where I'm coming from. I think it's a great movie and a great franchise. I have my problems with it too. I do. But overall, I'm very excited. I'm very happy that this is what I got in a Matrix sequel. So that's where I'm coming from.
Jumping into this film, having them go out of their way to get Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu Reeves in this, and even Jada Pinkett Smith, right, as like main parts of the film, makes it stand out so much that Lawrence Fishburne and Hugo Weaving are not in this film.
Yeah.
To me. And that's extremely distracting. Now, but now Zach has told me about Hugo Weaving. I don't understand and want to know about Lawrence Fishburne because his image was still in this film.
I don't know if Zach knows this or I'm trying to think of like, he may not have even been approached, Lawrence Fishburne.
He was asked about it and he said, oh, they didn't ask me, but I hope they didn't.
Yeah.
Well, wish him well, which was I thought that was like some kind of misdirect. I'm like, oh well, surely he'll be in the movie. It's like, not in it at all.
I thought so too. That I will say that is a problem I have with the movie. The fact that they could bring back so many people and not make time or maybe work around Hugo Weaving's. Around Hugo Weaving's schedule or Lawrence Fishburne's schedule. But having said all that, like. Hugo's Weaving's not being in the movie, I can understand more so than Lawrence Fishburne's. But then you kind of have to look at like the story they're telling and admit like if I the 60 years thing where this movie takes place 60 years after the last one. At first, I'm like, why does it have to be 60 years? But then realizing, oh. This is opening up already like the can of worms. It's like, well, it's another cycle. I think somebody alluded to that earlier. I think it's another cycle in like the Matrix programming, and you can't just go 20 years, not even. You have to go 60 and have this be in a whole new era, whole new generation. And Lawrence Fishburne, as Lawrence Fishburne, I don't think, age would have gotten him. Like,
well, if also, he died in the Matrix video game, if we really want to.
Although, in this. Although in Resurrections, I think he died in a different way than like the game, which I've done my quick research on the game, and like he died in an alley by like a robot or something.
I have a friend who knows the game, and he told me that same statue of Morpheus is actually in the game.
Holy crap!
But
okay.
it's in Zion. It's not in Io, which Io is just Zion without the Z in the N. I don't know if you guys
get it.
Pay attention get to it. That, but that's. The problem with them not being here, honestly, is the fact that Morpheus and Smith are in the movie. What you have to do is you just move past Agent Smith. Like, as much as I love Agent Smith, I think, again, he's a top 10 movie villain, right? You actually didn't even need to bring him back for the sequels. I mean, it worked out great for the sequels for Agent Smith to be there. But he was a program that was defeated and destroyed, and you could have moved on. And then he's in the sequels. I'm like, okay. But then that story, like, okay, he's been super defeated now. Let's move on. But they just keep bringing him back. And it's like, no. You could have just moved on. I'm just distracted that we got, like, CW Agent Smith almost, here, instead of, like, the Agent Smith.
And, see, I like this guy as Smith, though. Like, this, I love
Jonathan
this guy.
Groff.
I love him from Mindhunter. I think he's wonderful. And he kind of just sounds like his guy from Mindhunter. But I think he's good as Smith. But I want to know. Like, so does he not realize who he is when he's co-running this company with Keanu Reeves?
I believe. Okay, this is my, again, I've only seen it twice, and I'm not going to pretend to know everything about this movie. But I'll just say, yeah, I think for this first half, before he kind of becomes Smith, when like he's in that scene and like the water's falling and he picks up the gun and he yells, right. Mr. Anderson. Yeah. Before then, I think he, along with like Trinity slash Tiff and Anderson slash Neo, I think he was just part of the programming, not knowing full well what was happening. He's just a pawn in like the analyst game, Neil Patrick Harris. So that's my thought about Smith in the beginning, until he had that moment where he's like, oh, this is who I am. I'm the bad guy. So yeah, that's my thought on Smith and like him not knowing. Because I think he's being used too, like Trinity and Neo. Mm-hmm.
But that's never explained in the movie, just for the record. That is all I mean.
I think they do explain it in the very end. Like Trinity and Neo are being used as just their energy, and like they're like the fact that they're so close yet so far, like powers the Matrix now. And right. I think Agent Smith and that program has something to do with it too. That conflict that Smith has with Neo, you know, that's always going to be there, and that's what drives Neo to have like these visions, which powers the Matrix at this point. So you need like an antagonist like Smith slash Jonathan Groff to like be that guy, you know, have him be Neo's business partner and bring up these feelings of like, oh, I know you before. I know you from somewhere. Yeah, you're the Agent Smith from before, but yet I still have these feelings that I want to kill you. Like, you need that in the Matrix as it is now to power to power these, you know, power cells and keep their machines running, because in this Matrix, that the energy of like these conflicts is like more than like powerful than anything else, apparently. So that's my explanation of it.
Okay, so but then with Smith, so then Morpheus is sitting there. So I like a whole other can of worms is, why is Morpheus a program now?
Morpheus, who was Agent Smith in the program, which is
yes. So like he's Smith, and he's combined Smith with him. So if he's combined Smith with Morpheus, then who is Smith? Right.
Well, like, that's a different Smith.
A different Smith.
No, when Neo created this little box program. Like to run out the simulation of the Matrix, and then that's why I was repeating the first film and all that stuff, and that was completely his fabrication, Morpheus and Smith.
A modal, right? A modal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a modal. I didn't understand that in the beginning when I first saw it. I'm like, what the fuck? What's going on? But yeah, it's like Zach was saying, it's a modal inside the trilogy game that Mr. Anderson, that Thomas created. I can't explain this. I don't know why Anderson slash Neo would make a program that's designed with like parts Morpheus, parts Agent Smith. I thought that was kind of
Why wouldn't they just be their own character?
Yeah.
In there?
Why not just be Morpheus? Because we already have Agent Smith, so that was confusing to me. But I mean, I don't have a good explanation.
If he's created this modal. And it's repeating the scene with Carrie Ann Moss as Trinity. Why is it a completely different actress
doing the scene? I believe that is one of the person who's playing Trinity in that modal we see in the opening of the movie. And we're just getting to it, by the way, folks. This is I like that we're just jumping in, like trying to answer these questions. I believe the actress, the character playing Trinity, is one of the. Okay, I'm legitimately asking if any of you know this, but is that actress slash character from? Is that a crewmate in on the ship, on Bugs' ship that they're on?
It did look like the one woman who tells Neo like she was my hero, right? I don't know if that was her or not, but she did remind me of her. If that was intentional, maybe it was subliminal.
That's my thought, because I think the crew members from the ship and Bugs are coming in. Either to observe or be part of the modal that Neo is running in this Matrix game, and the fact that they're there, and the fact that Agent Smith slash Morpheus is there too. That's why that's why things become different after that. So that's my thought on that. Mm-hmm. Brandon's like shaking his head.
Well, okay. Well, let's take a step back. This movie is extremely meta. Right. If you pick up with the putting down, that'll probably take you a long way. But if you don't, it's probably not going to work for you. And I think they tried to be too clever with it. I mean, like, I know Thomas Anderson was a game designer. So it's like, okay, let's make him have designed the Matrix, but the Matrix were movies. So they could have maybe been an actor, but is that like, they didn't have to make him a game designer, because that Thomas Anderson was a whole other cycle. You know, like, they didn't need to keep that. They could have just made him, like, an actor who was in movies, and that would have been a more apt A-B comparison, you know. But, like, what kind of, these are some amazing cutscenes for this video game.
they're doing great work on the PS5 and the Xbox, whatever it's called now, XS. Have you guys played that Unreal 5 demo, Enter the Matrix? Like, that? No, I played that.
The new Enter the Matrix? Okay.
Yeah. Because they're like, oh, and also, I should say, that demo, which is free on the PS5 and the Xbox XS or whatever that's called. It's a cool demo. It's free. It's the actual gameplay is like maybe 10 minutes with like some video with like Keanu and Carrie Ann Moss. And that's also very meta. Like, they talk about marketing. They talk about Warner Brothers. They talk, like, it's very meta within this game. And the game itself looks amazing. And then my defense of the whole game thing, I get it. Like, it didn't need to be a video game. Why couldn't they, like you said, why couldn't it just be, you know, Keanu being an actor? But I think Lana is making a point about maybe it would have been too easy to make it, you know, a movie one-to-one for it to be a video game. I think that's her passion, is video games. I think that's why they made like that Matrix game from, you know, 2003 that was released around the same time as Reloaded, which I played and I bought on eBay just 3 weeks ago so I can play it again. Maybe she wanted just to focus on that and say, games nowadays, yes, like they say in the movie, it's part of, you know, this sort of corporate propaganda that really digs deep into our minds and tells us that war, you know, good versus bad, that's what we're plugged into. That's what we see with these video games. And, you know, you can expand that to any media. But I think I, for one, first thought, yeah, why couldn't it have been act? You know, why couldn't it have been filmmaking? Why couldn't it just be Matrix movies being referenced here? And then I thought, okay, video games, I think it's like nowadays definitely for sure and a target that's like worth looking at too, along with like movies. So I was okay with that change.
Well, I think one of the most interesting concepts would have been like, they talk about people want to be plugged in like today. Like, I guess I was looking for, and maybe it was there, I just didn't see it. I was looking for more commentary on like the 21st century. We are plugged into everything all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't think they really, I think they gave it some lip service, but I think they could have gone much deeper with that than they ended up doing.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. See, I didn't have a problem with the video game. Like, the video game kind of felt like it made sense to me because, you know, when they're going all these meta things, to me it tied in mentally to Enter the Matrix, right? The original game and whatnot, as that being a part of it. There was video footage shot for that video game, right? With Jada Pinkett,
right.
Her character. And it gives a reason for... Why does the character in the game look like Carrie Ann Moss, like why, like Tiffany, is because he fell in love with this woman and made the game character about her, and that's why she looks the same and whatnot. So, like, I don't know, like, to me, the video game made a little bit of sense to me, so I didn't have a problem with the video game aspect of it here. But I
keep going down your list.
When they're sitting there discussing the Matrix 4 video game, I want to know what you guys think. Why were they repeating the dialogue and having the characters that were saying the dialogue be wearing different clothes?
Every time
they showed this, like, are they telling? Like, so my thought is, are they telling me that this is cycle after cycle after cycle after cycle that the same conversations are happening? But then they give us the time of Jada Pinkett Smith's alive and it's 60 years later and whatnot.
I think
so
that's one way to look at it, right? But I think looking at it actually, I think it's a commentary on how repetitive these board meetings are, of like, yes, people are like, they're saying the same thing as if it was a new crazy idea, like two days after they had already said something. I did like that commentary on like, oh man, this is what people want, and then 2 days later, like, man, this is what people want. They say the same thing the same way, and it's like some mind-blowing revelation they have. And I believe that's more what they were talking about than a Matrix cyclical thing there, Brennan.
Having been through some of those meetings myself, similar to that, yeah, I can say that's the case. Just the same ideas repeated over and over. And hey, I liked it. I think there were editing choices. I was reminded of Steven Soderbergh and like The Limey, which kind of does some of the same thing, where different scenes, like cutting together different scenes, like with different, like maybe with the same character in different spots, but saying one singular thing, cutting together these scenes. I like the editing choice because you don't see that too often, except if you're watching a Soderbergh film.
Okay. Christina Ricci kind of wasted in that sequence, though. I was like, oh, why are you here for one day?
It was nice to see her for that one minute.
Good to see her.
She was in this? I didn't notice. I didn't even notice.
Oh, yeah, that was her. She was like part of marketing that was
She's talking about, we're going to make Matrix 4 and hopefully more.
Is that her?
Yeah.
Holy
smokes. That's her, yeah.
That's her. Okay. She's all grown up since she was Wednesday in the Addams Family. Holy smokes.
Yeah, so Marcel, in case you haven't told, this entire podcast is you explaining the movie to me, okay?
Just this is fine. I'm the Matrix expert. I'll take it. I'll take it.
Okay, so there are too many damn clips from the first three movies in this.
Absolutely. That was ridiculous. That was ridiculous. Okay. Like, that was unnecessary. Come on.
I mean, that's a fair complaint, but
like if it's a movie in the reality of what they're in, I will allow, like, okay, look, we're showing the projection of the first film, fine. But to continuously cut back to like frames while other things are happening, that was just very excessive. I was not a fan of that.
Here's the thing. I understand the criticism. I get it. Okay. But maybe it's because this movie for me really is like going back to
sort of my Matrix.
Let's go back to the Matrix points I made earlier. But when the reveal of the analysts happens and we talked about like what powers the Matrix now and how vital memories are to people in the Matrix too, how stories can, you know, create more brain energy power for the robots to suck out of us. I thought it makes complete sense to flashback to moments. And maybe, okay, and I would say this. Maybe it works better for me because I have a better emotional connection than, like, you two for the last two movies or for, like, the trilogy, right? Because I love those movies. And, like, every time they flash scenes from past movies, I got this charge of, like, oh, that, especially towards the end when, like, Neo and Trinity finally sat down and Trinity realized she was, you know, Trinity and not Tiff. And also, like, when they grasped hands at the end and, like, you saw the flashbacks of, like, Neo and Trinity in the trilogy. That, to me, is powerful stuff. I don't want that taken out at all. Like, that works for me because, like I said, like, the Matrix here takes these memories, these stories, and makes you care about them. I definitely cared about them. And having those flashbacks just reemphasize that. It's like, this is what you care about. These stories are important. This is what gets you going, man. You Matrix fan. That's me. So, yeah, I loved those flashbacks, those clips, the glimpses of the last movies, because, like, that, for me, it's nostalgia. It makes me feel good. I think that's even said in the movie. It's for me, this is where nostalgia works, because this story, for me, still works after so many years. So, don't take that away from me. Give me my nostalgia.
So the issue that I have with that is that, okay, so we're looking at something here. So I mentioned that I think that this should be Matrix rebooted, okay? So, like, this is 20 years later, okay? That is a generation. Okay, it has been a generation since the Matrix movies have come out. And, I mean, like, the recent example that I would compare this to would be, like, Halloween, right? Like, the 2018 version of Halloween. Like, that's, like, two generations, right? Like, it's been a long time since that one. But I would have been frustrated if that Halloween film had kept showing flashbacks of the first movie, right? But with this one here, it's like you're kind of reinventing this and you're bringing in a whole new audience. So you got two levels of audience. You got the people who've been here since the beginning, and you've got the people who are coming in new. And with all the callbacks that they've got in the movie, I think that that should be enough for the people like you that have seen these movies and are connecting on that love story versus throwing this stuff for the new people that are coming into this film or the people like me who, I'm sorry, I still don't care about the love story between these two guys.
Okay? Yeah, exactly.
So, like, it's adding on too much of that callback, and I just think it's overkill for the film.
As somebody who when I saw this at a press screening, mm-hmm. I took along another friend who they hadn't seen any of the Matrix movies. And I was like, you know what? Just come see this movie. You know what the Matrix is, but you don't know what the Matrix is. So let's see if you end up liking it. They did not like it at all. This is not for the new people, I have to say. I understand, like, you know, you think for something like this, they should cater it to anybody new to the franchise. But this movie makes no attempt at that. I can't speak to that. Like, yeah. And I hate to say it, but this movie is mostly just for Matrix fans who, like, are already way in depth with, like, the Matrix trilogy, who love those stories to death. And I'm interested to find anybody who's coming into this new, who hasn't seen the first three, comes into this, and they end up liking it. People might do that. People might end up liking this, having not seen the last three, but I'd be surprised. I want to know if anybody's out there, like I'm saying, you know, that happens
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
But I guess my point is, like, again, it's hard for me to say this, but this is not for the normals. This is for the Matrix fans.
Can I tell you when the movie completely lost me and it broke me and it's over for me now? Is when the Merovingian showed up.
Oh my God. Holy I was out. I'm like,
that is exactly when I tapped out. I was like, I am done. But he shows up looking like a hobo, like yelling and then like sequels and reboots. I'm like, you guys are just because you're paying lip service to what you're doing, you're still doing it. Like, this is just in my opinion. Yeah. And then it was just so out of place. Like, remember this guy? They could have at least brought in the ghosts or something. I guess some of those people were other people on the staircase that Neo fought and reloaded. But I'm like, the ghosts are the most identifiable ones. Just, they could be all CGI. It wouldn't be that, you know, big a deal. I don't know, but that's when I was done.
I'm not legit. That is it. When the Merovingian went off, I'm in the theater and I went like this and just shook my head like this. And then the second watch, it was the same spot. I'm just like, this is just too much.
I was very happy with him showing up. I was very happy. I
don't want to change your mind, Marcel.
I want
you to change my mind. That's what I would love.
Let me be very clear. You're never going to change my mind. And also say this. When that this scene is divisive. I get it. Because it's not only you two. The person I saw it with who had no idea what the Matrix was, other than like the Matrix as a name and like mm-hmm. something that you should know, not having seen the three movies, coming into this, that person, when that scene was happening with the Merovingian and him screaming, she leans over to me and she goes, I don't know what the f*** is going on. And I go, I just shook my head and just not. I was like, I can't, I don't have the time here in the middle of a movie screening to tell you what's happening in the scene. I cannot. Yeah. So I get it. But, and maybe it is a bridge too far with that scene, him screaming, like, we used to have books, we used to have you have no culture anymore, like sequel, yeah. I mean, sequels, reboots. Yeah, it may be pushing it a bit too far, but I don't know, I still dug it. And the fact that, like, that happens, just that scene, and you don't really get too much of that, really, all throughout the movie. Maybe in the beginning when they talk about Warner Brothers being the parent company and everything.
Yes.
That's so a bit, like, too much too.
Breaking the meta barrier of it. I don't think Lana broke it too much. I think it was just enough for me. Because other than that, like, the rest of the movie, expositional and, like, a lot of steps needing to follow when like, extracting Trinity from the Matrix, which I'm, like, first time I was watching it, I was like, what? I don't understand what's going on, but I'm here for the ride. Second time, it made more sense, but the last half of the Matrix Resurrections just felt very much like the ending of, like, Reloaded or, like, the ending of Revolutions, where a lot of sci-fi exposition to get, you know, from A to B, but I'm here for it, though.
Yeah, I felt like they were almost to where, like, because the end of Reloaded is really fantastic editing, and, like, they're talking about the plan, and you see the plan, and they kind of do that with Satie. They start talking about, like, okay, well, you need to do here and this, and then they just... then that kind of stops and they just continue like normal. Like, and there's not like the cross editing that was so effective with Reloaded there. But yeah, man, like for all the nostalgia bait, remember this stuff that like they were criticizing, that is exactly what the Merovingian was. You cut him out of that scene, no difference at all. In fact, it's much better because we're not frustrated pulling our hair out.
But I also like him because, like, second time I was watching it, I realized, oh, because, like, the first time I watched it, I didn't make this connection. And I think it's kind of obvious now watching it, but if people remember their Matrix lore from Reloaded, like, yes, in the Matrix, like, it's revealed that Neo is the one in name only. He's not there to save the world, though. He's there to, like, restart the cycle and, like, sort of, like, do it all over again and, like, bring the code back to the source and sort of restart Zion. And seeing this for the second time, I realized, oh, like, what if this is just another cycle? Like, what if this is just another, you know, Matrix level of control? And of course, like, Merv would be there, the Merovingian, because, like, the last cycle, like, these old programs are still there. And of course he'd survive, like, the purge that happened in, like, the robot headquarters or whatever. Lots going on. But this is my explanation of just saying, I like that Merv was there because you want these, like, old programs around after all these cycles happen. So I did not mind the Merovingian showing up.
Mm-hmm. Well, if that scene didn't break me, the next scene would have with Neil Patrick Harris, because I did not like Neil Patrick Harris in this. I did not buy him as the accountant. I didn't like his whole spiel. Like, I just didn't buy him. Like, I didn't like it, and that's didn't work for me. So
listen, I didn't understand.
Like, the architect, he replaced, like, the architect. The architect got fired. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Like, his numbers are up, so he gets to keep his job. Like, I felt like that they just too much personification of these machines. Like, the whole point is they're different. You know, they think they're like the architect. He spoke different. He thought differently. I like that because he's a machine. You know, that makes sense. But Neil Patrick Harris is over here talking about, like, getting our numbers up and all this stuff. I did like his thing about fear and the bullet. Like, that was a cool exchange. But and for him being the big bad, I don't know. It didn't work for me.
Like, what? Okay, so what happened when he got shot and then he wasn't dead? Like, he disintegrated and then wasn't dead?
Oh, is that at the very end when Smith shoots him?
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, I mean, I don't think he died. I think he's still around, right? Yeah, because he
comes
back.
That's
right.
He's
in the next scene, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like those other programs or bots. I forget my terminology. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the Matrix hardcore fans listening. But yes, there are bots in this, I believe, because the bots become bombs, guys.
Yeah.
In the chase
sequence.
They start
dropping from the sky. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the analyst, played by Neil Patrick Harris, is sort of like a bot where he can come back, and he's just a program just hidden deep inside the Matrix. And I'll say, like, I'll admit, like, I'm not the biggest Neil Patrick Harris guy. I like him in some parts, but in this, yeah, maybe find somebody more who has a better
and
bad
I'm
guy
not saying it's because he's a comedic
persona.
Actor because I love him in no. Gone Girl. I think he's fantastic in that, and yeah, he does some other performances. I just didn't, the vibe was not right. And okay, so answer me this, Marcel, though. For him, does he need the cat to reset the Matrix? Because it seemed like in the end confrontation he had to get the cat to reset things that he couldn't get to the cat, and that was the whole reason he got defeated at the end, right?
Yeah, the cat's called Deja Vu, in case you didn't know.
In case you didn't know. Yeah, the foo-fall and all that.
I think the architect is just, the analyst, played by Neil Patrick Harris. He's just a playful guy who goes for the obvious, and he made the button to reset things a cat, which triggers Neo, because that's Deja Vu for Neo. So that's my kind of thought process on this. Like, of course he'd make it a cat, because that is what it is. Like, it's deja vu. It's like changing something. It's repeating something. Thematically, I think it works. It didn't need to be a cat, but I don't see why it couldn't be a cat. Mm-hmm. Could have been a button. But yeah.
The button thing makes sense, I guess, because, look, in the first film, that was just how he saw deja vu.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And now it's become like, oh, well, that is the trigger for deja vu.
Yeah, and it's all about prodding Neo and all this. Like, he sees the black cat. Is like, was that deja vu? It was. And it's okay. Like the analyst, like, just again, like, messing with Neo throughout this whole thing.
Speaking of that scene, though, because I have questions too, Brendan. Speaking of that scene, though, when Tiffany showed up at the coffee shop, did she not think it was odd that hundreds of SWAT team people were there? She just sits down to have a cup of coffee with Neo. Did she not see them? Like, what was going on there?
It doesn't make sense.
Okay.
And as soon as she saw, you know, Neo there, I mean, I don't know. I see your point. It's a very odd place to be, and I think she had enough hesitation there. Like, what's going on? And like, she was gonna leave at one point. Yeah, that was a big thing.
Yeah, because it makes if it's really just her and she makes the choice, like, hey, there's crazy stuff going on, or you can go back to your fake family. Like,
yeah.
If the world around here was normal, that would have made the choice maybe a little more like tough. But I just. Clearly something is going on here that's beyond your understanding. I don't know. I mean, to me, that was just very... That wasn't even mentioned. You know, she just sits down and there's, like, rows and rows of police people just everywhere.
She goes...
But in that, though, like, I know that this is going to be an odd connection here, but in Jumanji sequels...
Okay. I had no idea that's where it's going to go.
All right. When they ask a question of, like, the programs... That's outside of their thing. They can't process that question, so it's like they never heard it. So, like, maybe with her being inside the game and programmed at the time, like,
she didn't see all those people.
She just couldn't process that, maybe, I guess.
Kind of what I thought. I'm like, there's no way that she just was seeming so natural there.
In Jumanji.
In Jumanji, with the next level or whatever. The rubble and the jumble.
So, I want to go back to another thing earlier here in the film. I think they explained this, but I think I just couldn't process it because I'm still trying to process everything else here. The older reflections.
Yeah.
That's how they look to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
That was my understanding.
Do they not look like that to each other? Does Trinity and Neo see what we see?
That's a good point. I know they explained how... They see themselves, like Neo looks in the mirror and sees Neo, but to other people, he's somebody else. That's a good point. I don't know what they see when they see each other.
I think they must see...
They must see their true selves.
He saw her reflection in the table and I think did
a double
take.
He was kind of shocked, yeah.
Yeah.
But then that little program guy that was always hanging around him trying to keep him on course, he calls her a MILF.
Wait, which one? That guy.
The guy who's like,
the trilogy
through for you.
The trilogy changed my life. That guy,
yeah.
Although, I mean, if you look at her reflection, okay, you brought up MILF, okay, so.
The movie brought up MILF.
The movie brought up MILF. I'm just saying this. I did notice a reflection on a second watch. I focused on it. Also, MILF too.
Okay, I didn't notice as much.
I didn't notice it. It was so quick. So
I made sure I didn't freeze frame, but I made sure to really focus on it. And yeah, I'll just say that she's attractive in both. Visions.
I'll definitely say that like Keanu Reeves' reflection is not a PILF, right, or whatever, or a DILF or whatever.
It depends on what you're into. I mean.
So anyway.
Kind of an interesting. I'm like, I think they kind of explained this, but I didn't quite process it here, so I wanted to talk about that. Okay, so other question here. Okay, so going back earlier when Smith shoots Neo, okay, like in that scene when he gets the gun, and then he wakes up in the counseling session,
analyst office,
in the analyst office. What happened there?
That was the analyst resetting things.
That's a reset. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why the next scene you see, I think Neo looks at that cat, and now he's back in the office. Yeah, like we were saying earlier, that's like a reset button.
Did he kill him and then reset it?
I think that's the trigger. It's like either shooting Neo or like coming very close to it. Because like earlier he had a suicide attempt, so I think every time he's that close or maybe dies. I'm not sure.
Do you think he really jumped off the building, or
I don't think he did.
The blue-haired girl said
he didn't fall.
You didn't fall,
so maybe
you jumped but didn't fall.
Maybe he got zapped back into a deja vu. Maybe he went back to the analyst office after that because like it's not clear. I mean, she said he didn't fall, so where did he go? Back to the analyst office, I think, after that, because I think that's the thing. Like every time either. He has these visions or he comes close to death. That's when the analyst chooses to grab Deja Vu, the cat, and just get him back into the office and just say, hey, that was another vision you had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did you think of them bringing back Niobe?
No, I liked it. I did. Okay, I'll say this. And this will kind of tie into like something I love about this whole thing. But like, I liked it. First time, fine, sure. I thought emotionally it really hit me the second time, the fact that she was back and the fact that they got Jada Pinkett Smith back, right? And it's something I didn't even catch, really, in the first trilogy. And then bringing it here and kind of nodding to it really hit me. But the fact that, like, she... you know, okay, fine. She's exposition. She's like, hey, here's what's been happening in Zion / Io for the last 60 years. Here, blah, 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 blah. After all that, when she... Like, after, and she, when she finds the truth, when she finds out the truth about Trinity and how the programs were lying to her, that, like, she was, you know, she was actually still alive. And Neil, too. I think that, yeah, they were both being hidden from Niobe. Like, she asks the captains to volunteer, and they all do. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a nod to, like, Reloaded, when, like, they're asking for volunteers and nobody would volunteer. And then Niobe stands up and does. So, to me, it hits hard, guys. To you, you don't give a crap. Well, like, I'll just say it's a moment that, like, nods to her character in two, and to me, it shows a theme going on here where it's like, we can do better. It's like, these people are like, well, they're volunteering for this, and it's like, where was this support 60 years ago?
I caught that. I see your point. But
I caught that. But sorry to interrupt. I just think if they would have cut to another shot from the Matrix when they did
that, understood.
I would have understood that.
So the one time, damn it.
You know, Brandon, you mentioned that real quick. You mentioned that, like, at a time I thought, like, where is the shot from the Matrix is when she shows the tattoo. I was like, where's the insert shot of Follow the White Rabbit from the first movie when she shows him the tattoo? That's the perfect time for that. But so for Niobe, though, it's like, Kate, she's like, I don't believe in the one. I'm like, well, then he goes, well, you believe me? You gave me your ship. I was like, the whole point was, like, she didn't believe, and then she kind of came around, but I guess she lost her faith or whatever, even though Neo ended the war. Hello.
Although, but I mean, I think that they did a good job of, like, him disappearing and then people thinking, was he on the machine side? Because, like, he just disappeared and nobody knew what happened for, like, and then it was like, Morpheus, who believed, but then he got killed for it. Like, and that hurt. And I could see Niobe just saying, you know, screw it, I don't believe anymore. So I bought it.
I just think they should have, all video game canon aside, that character should have been Morpheus. That could have been an old Lawrence Fishburne.
That's fair. I see that.
Don't
see
do that. The digital... I love Yaya. He's got a great agent. He's in so many movies now. Like Black... Oh, he's Black Manta on Aquaman. He's the Candyman.
Yeah, he was
he's
in Watchmen.
Good on you, man.
He was in the new Candyman, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great agent. This guy is the best agent in Hollywood right now. He's attached to so many franchises, but...
Yaha Abdul-Mateen II.
The second, I believe. He was in an episode of Black Mirror as well. So, yeah. So just don't do the digital Morpheus. Bring back Lawrence Fishburne as old guy in the real world, and then you have your Trinity, no pun intended, of Neo, Morpheus, and Trinity, who are your core of the Matrix.
Yeah, I get it. It is hard for me to not have Lawrence Fishburne.
No one was calling for Niobe to be back. You know what I'm saying? It's just like,
I get it. I get it. I understand. But and then like to jump off on that. Okay, that point. I mean, Zach got it. Brandon didn't get it because like there was no cut sequence, right? There's no sequence like showing you what happened to Reloaded, right? But then it made me realize that this movie is like sort of like a mea culpa and saying, and you might remember this from my last conversation about Revolutions and how I just hated Trinity's end. And I was hoping that Resurrections would, you know, resolve things, like not resolve, but like just try again. And they literally do. They say to themselves, Lana and the people who made this movie, they say to themselves, let's try again. Let's do things better. And the Niobe thing is one. Then bringing back Trinity and Neo together, that's two. And then a small thing I caught second time, and maybe you guys caught it, like the fact they don't kill any crew members like they do in Matrix 1. And the fact that Neo and Trinity don't have any guns. Like they just use like their fists and kicks and power shoves,
and
right?
Hadouken.
That is a new power for the one. Just force field blasting.
But is he still the one though?
That's the thing. I don't have an answer to that. I mean,
Trinity's the one now,
maybe,
right?
They're both the one. They're sharing the power, or they have equal power. But yeah, and I guess my point is like Orlana at least is like she's conscious enough to think, not that there were mistakes, but the whole talk about like war being a noise in your head, as is the Matrix, and propaganda and how the Matrix delivers these ideas and presents them to you, belittling, like, you know, romance and things, and making you think about war. Like, maybe the Matrix trilogy is part of this, like, sort of, like, violence in media that maybe we should be thinking about with, like, a better lenses. And the fact that there's, like, less violence, sort of, in this, and, like, how it handles the violence and how it handles, like, treating its crew members and characters. Because every time I watch the first Matrix, it's always brutal when they kill those crew members. Like, when they yank out their
plugs. Not like this, yeah, exactly. Right?
It's still, for me, like bone-chilling. And the fact that there is a shot in here where they're all safe and sound and they're all hugging, like, they saved each other, that, for me, is powerful. And that, for me, is, like, generational. And, like, here's my, like, final thesis on this. I now shut up after this. But the final thesis I got from this was, like, yes, we may have victories, we may have won the war, right? But it always can happen again, and what we can do in the future is just be better. And I think in this world, in this Matrix world, it's like they're living in another cycle, but I think gradually they're better people for it, of the you know, things that happened 60 years ago. Because, like Neo says in the movie, it's like, why did I do all that? Like, we're back where we started. But they're better. Like, their society's better. They make better decisions. I don't know. It makes me think, guys. It makes me think.
Like, I'm glad that you're passionate.
You're like,
about
I'm glad
it.
That you liked it.
No. I am glad that you liked it. I'm not being pedantic or anything, like, no, whatever the word is. I am glad, because I've seen a lot of kind of divisive reviews online already about this, and while I'm on the negative side of it, I've seen quite a few people who are like, this has really resonated with them. They think this is wonderful. You know, like our friend Darren Mooney, who almost seems to never have a positive thing to say about a movie, loved this one, right? You know, he gave it 4 stars, right? And so, like, this has resonated with a lot of people. And I mean, like, this is a movie podcast about movies, remakes, and sequels, because we love sequels, right? We do honestly love them. And so I want to love this movie. I mean, like, I've always wanted to love the Matrix movies in general, and they just never resonated. But I think this is for the fans of the films rather than, like, bringing in new fans, or, you know, the casual fans or whatnot. I think this is definitely for the people where the rest of the films resonate with them more, and that's okay, right? That's okay that's what this is. So, I it's not like I couldn't pay attention to the movie. I was confused. I was very confused. I gotta say, like, I can understand the necessity of a film, and saying I've watched it a bunch of times, and every time I watch it, I get something more. But I mean, like, you and I, Marcel, have seen this twice. I've seen this twice, and I'm like, I don't understand the motivation of, I still don't quite understand the motivation of Neil Patrick Harris' character, right? Like, it's just not clicking with me. I'm like, what happened with Smith kill the guy? Like, there's stuff in here that I just don't even understand what happened.
Oh, no.
You know, and to have seen it twice within 24 hours and not catch that, I don't think that's right. I don't know. So
I completely understand, and I'll say I've only seen this twice. And mm-hmm. Look, I was looking through my logs of the last 10 years on Letterboxd, 11 years now, and I've seen The Matrix, the first one, 11 times. I've seen Reloaded 10 times in the last year, and I've seen Revolutions like 6 times in the last year. And I think this one,
In the last 11 years.
In the last year, I've seen, like, Reloaded, like, 2 times, so maybe 3. But, you know, with all those, the first 3 for sure, every time I watch them, they grow more and more, they just get better in my eyes. And with this was, like, an instant jump for me from, like, good to great Resurrections. And I'm not going to pretend to know everything about it. I can't answer every question. I still have thoughts. I still have, like, I have confusion about that third act, a lot of it. But I'm for sure going to see this more and more. Mm-hmm. Who knows how many times I'll end up seeing it in the next 10 years. But it's going to be one of those where it's going to be in rotation with, like, the other, with the trilogy. I'm going to see this equal amounts. And I already know I love them as much as the last two. So, yeah. This is my favorite movie of the last, like, 2 or 3 months.
I'm definitely going to buy it when it comes out on HD DVD, you know? So.
HD DVD? Oh, nostalgia. Oh, nostalgia.
I still have two more questions. I don't know if we want to end. That was kind of a nice summary. I don't know if we want. Do you want to hit these last two questions?
Let's keep going.
Yeah, bring it on.
I'm here.
Okay.
I have one last question after yours.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. I've been dominated. Do you want to go ahead for a sec?
Well, okay. Well, this is not really like a plot question. This is just. I mean, you mentioned the action being different, right? The violence level, the style of it. I did. Do you think that's a conscious effort to make it less John Wick with the gun fu and all that? Because he's so
possibly.
Like, I mean, he looks like he literally we're filming these around the same time. He walked off the set of John Wick, walked on the set looking just like John Wick. You didn't do the martial arts and the guns. He really has just the force powers more than anything else this time around. Do you think that was a conscious decision?
It might be conscious. It might be because Lana just wanted to try something different. Apparently, according to Keanu, and maybe this is just this is not what he meant, but he said there wasn't much training for the physical fights. But who knows what that means? Like he was saying,
comparatively from last time, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Or kind of going to that point I made earlier about like her waiting for like the right time of the day to shoot. Like maybe they were more waiting on that, like for the visual style of the movie rather than like the technical fighting side. And of course, like maybe Lana knew Keanu's Keanu. Like throw anything at him, let's sort of improvise these fights, let's go for it. So I don't know. For me, maybe 50-50. Conscious and like just either just trying something new.
Maybe I'm one of those shallow bullet time people they were talking about, but I did think the action here did not live up to the action from the trilogy. So I mean compare like the motorcycle chase at the end, compare that to the Reloaded. Not that you could really. The Reloaded motorcycle chase is one of the greatest action sequences of all time. It's hard to compare that too. But like even like the Agent Smith Neo throwdown was fantastic at Revolutions. And it's like there was nothing on that level at all, I don't think, you know.
No, the final chase through the city, I think it's not a fantastic action sequence. But for me, emotionally it works. I think visually it works because I don't. I was like, how did they shoot that? Like, did they wait middle of the night?
They damaged a lot of San Francisco streets. So $400,000 of property damage.
They ran rampant through San Francisco at 3 a.m. in the morning to get those shots, which I liked the look of it. But yeah, I'll admit, not lower tier, bottom tier, I guess, in terms of action for the franchise. But I still enjoy that final action set piece.
Okay. Why can't Neo fly?
He just wasn't ready, I guess. I don't know. He really wanted to have his soulmate first before he could fly. He's very self-conscious about that. I don't know. I honestly don't have an answer. I don't know why he couldn't fly until he could fly.
Who the hell did Smith turn into at the end?
Oh, just random guy. He was kind of resorting back to his like virus program, I guess, from the middle chapters. So okay. Like he just liked to inhabit bodies. So he's like, okay, time's up. So he just went back to being a bot. I don't know where he went, but that's my read on that situation.
They should have made him Hugo Weaving at the end.
That would have been cool.
CGI Hugo Weaving face.
What if that guy was the original co-owner of the video game company with Neo?
Maybe.
I don't know what the current state of the Matrix is now after all this has gone down. I mean, because is Smith still around? Neo and Trinity are reshaping everything, painting the rainbows, as they said. So,
yeah,
he's still out there. So
he's still out there. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in the Matrix. R word. I don't know what's going to be the next one. They're running
Requiem.
Out of R words. Requiem. No, save that for the third
the last
installment.
One, when they all die again. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
They might have said this in the film here. Why did the blue-haired girl, why did she need to be like linked to Trinity?
Yeah, that's going to be me saying I
for that
no
really
idea.
Cool shot where she's screaming and you see the doubles. That's why.
What? Yeah. I don't know what's going on there.
No,
so.
It didn't make sense to me either.
I think a lot of this, not a lot, maybe some of this will be answered in the Sense 8 series. I have not seen yet. I keep hearing it's great. I feel really bad for not having seen it, knowing that like so many people from that series are working on this, worked on, you know, Resurrection. So I think it just has to do with like Lana, you know, the Wachowski's whole perception of, you know, what is a body or, you know, your spirit being in a body and how that can change. I don't know. That's my kind of read on that situation. I don't know why technically that had to happen, but that's just me thinking Wachowski's playing with that theme. Lana Wachowski playing with that
theme.
You
know, on that point, all that considered, Marcelo, I expected them to do what they wanted to do with Switch from the first movie, right? Like, change the sexes through the real world of the Matrix, and there were no characters. I was shocked.
I mean,
that they didn't do I was too.
Maybe this is answered by, you know, that board meeting we were saying earlier, how sort of like these ideas go, you know, over and over in these meetings, sort of like what the Matrix should be, what the Matrix should represent. And one of them, like in saying what the Matrix is, was saying, oh, the Matrix is about, you know, crypto. What is it like? Fascism, crypto fascism. And then another one says, oh, it's a trans allegory. So maybe she just wanted to avoid that, you know, direct one-to-one comparison. And like, I don't know. Again, my read on it, I don't know, guys. So I would have loved to have seen that, but maybe she just thought it was like too simple of a, you know, something to put in there. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you're a big podcaster and like movie reviewer and whatnot. Can you not just phone Lana right now?
I wish I had her number. I do.
Zach, you got some questions for us?
I do have some questions for you guys, and I guess this is up for debate, but bullet time in this film. How many times?
Okay. I would say zero. Like, based on what we saw in the previous three films, I would say zero.
If we're not counting the stock footage, that's correct. I mean, we established these very specific rules that you had to do a 360 and an axis change, but, and none of that happens.
That's the thing. Resurrections just breaks all that and just says, for me, there's like at least two, maybe three, but I can see you not counting them because they're not the, you know, as adhered in like early on in the series.
We made these rules.
I know. I'm just saying. But Lana Wachowski is like, I'm going to break these rules is what I'm saying. And I think
as many times they said bullet time in the movie, they ironically don't give you the classic bullet time, do they?
I think when the analyst appears and like talks about bullet time and like has that, I don't know how they did it. I mean, it's not like 100% bullet time, but you can see like
him zipping through the frame.
Yeah, like Keanu's like moving in slow-mo and like, mm-hmm. you know, Patrick Harris is like kind of zipping in. So to me, that is like sort of like a nod to bullet time. I'm not sure how they filmed it. It kind of seemed like there's some magic there. But yeah, when it comes to the record books, no, I don't believe that's bullet time. But for me, in my heart, I'd count that as bullet time.
Okay. Well, speaking of that sequence, I actually, and HBO Max, I was like, is my HBO Max glitching right now? I can just the way he was moving around. I was like, wait a minute. He's not moving and he is. Rewind. Oh, okay. That is how it's supposed to be. But
the way even still that was filmed was weird. Like it was kind of glitchy.
Yeah.
Even in the theater, I saw it. Like it was odd.
Yeah, I rewound it like three times to make sure it just wasn't like buffering or something on my HBO Max. So
you're like, oh no, finally, the HBO Max app.
That's what they've all been talking about.
I get it now.
So we're going to call it zero then.
Yeah.
Based on the rules we made in these conversations. But I see your point too, Marcelo. But we're going to stay at a hard 11.
This is as bad as the log ever count, man. Come on.
But I was so good at, what was the one before this that was really high?
Scream Queen count?
Yeah. Lots of screams for King Kong. But so there you have it. We're at 11. Big question, my friends. Out of five red pills, why would you give it five, Marcelo?
Well, I'm not going to give it five.
Okay.
He already said four.
Yeah. earlier I said 4.5. I'm going to break one of those pills in half and take it.
Okay.
It's 4.5 out of five for me. And
we didn't convince you to drop that number at all?
No, not at all.
We're not here to convince, Brandon. We're just here to share. We're just here to share.
I admit you made valid points, but either I'm just way too plugged into this series. And it's not that I'm explaining it away. It's like whatever problem I have with this, like the positive just completely outweigh it. It like I said before, it's messy in the third act for sure. I'm not sure exactly what's all going on, but I could have said that when I first watched like Reloaded or Revolutions. There are lines in it that really resonate with me. So, sort of like the lines in like Revolutions that I talked about in that episode. And my final point is I can't think of a more heartbreaking, in a good way, scene for me this year then like when Neo and Trinity sit down and they talk about, or Trinity says something to the effect of like, you know, like I know you're my soulmate, and why did it take you so long, you know, to get to me. And that scene just broke my heart. I, because again, I'm just so connected to these characters. It's what I wanted, and it wasn't. It didn't like, you know, it's that nostalgia that doesn't feel forced for me. It earned all its emotional beats, especially that one. So, yeah, that's my final thoughts on this, guys, and that's my rating. It's 4.5 out of 5.
What about you, Brandon?
Yeah, I should hang up.
This is a 2. I give this a 2. So, you know, I give a 1 to movies that I fall asleep during because I can't pay attention or whatever. But it's like I'm watching this thing and I'm seeing everything. I'm just not comprehending it because it's dense. But it's just it's too much for me. It's a 2. I give this a 2. I blamed the first viewing of it on the viewing experience because I really couldn't understand the dialogue in the cinema that I went to the first time. The second time it was okay. But my second review is like, this movie is like Terminator Genesis. It's just not as good.
Oh, no. So, that is so terrible. No.
No, let's do the stuff that we've seen before and do it again, just different. I love Terminator Genesis. I don't love this. So, yeah.
Brandon, Zach, how about you? I'm going to do you one better. 1.5 out of 5.
1.5. 1.5 out of 5. Yeah, so Marcello.
A victim of perhaps my own high expectations, because I was so hyped for this.
Yeah.
And I really...
You were.
I was blindsided by how much I did not enjoy this movie. So that's what I'm going through right now as of today. That's where we rank it. But when we come back again and do The Matrix R something else...
The Matrix Rehab.
We Matrix Rehab and then Matrix Requiem. We can reassess at that time. But that's where I am.
Rehabilitations.
That's what I need after this. Yeah. So,
And I just quickly say, I had a feeling that this one was going to be, like, quote-unquote for the fans, or at least for the fans of, like, the sequels for sure. I had that feeling coming in, and lo and behold, that's where we are. I can't say, you know, I'm not disappointed. I am disappointed in the both of you, but not surprised. Not surprised.
Well, on that note, is this franchise fatigue? What do you say, Marcel?
No, this franchise is not fatigued. I'm excited. I said I'm hesitant in really wanting a sequel because I'd be fine with just this being the end. We'll see. But I do think this has energy. I do think if we continue on with this world, I'll be excited for it, especially if like Lana is still in charge and if this cast and crew is the same and if they decide to bring back Hugo Weaving and Lawrence Fishburne in some way, I'd be even more excited. But yeah, I'm totally on board. One of my favorite film franchises, continues to be great for me. Yeah, this is alive and kicking for me.
Mm-hmm. Brandon?
I don't want any more.
No.
Zach.
Same. Like this re-energized my Matrix fandom and then it just killed it immediately. So it's sad. But I am also going to say it is fatigued at this point. Now if they make another one, yeah, I'll see it. But I'm not going to be, you know.
I could be happy about it.
Not going to be happy about it.
I'll see it under protest.
Look, if it's on HBO Max for free, sure. Oh,
why do we see it? Because we love sequels. And yes, we're going to go see it. We love sequels. So we just don't love this sequel. So, Marcello, thank you so much for joining us for these. We are very thrilled. And I'm so glad you were here to balance this discussion. Because, you know, unlike online, I like hearing opinions that are different from my own, and I like talking about it. And I think that makes a much more interesting discussion, whether I like it and somebody else doesn't, or whether somebody else likes it and I don't. That makes for a way better discussion because we're seeing it from two different sides and we're discussing two different sides of it. And whatever you listeners are, whatever side of the fence you guys are on, I wish everybody loved this movie. I wish this movie was amazing because I was very excited too. I was getting very excited for this film. I thought it was a wonderful trailer. And after seeing a couple times is pretty hyped. But thank you, Marcello, for joining us, and thank you for balancing the discussion. Where can people find you online?
I'll just say thanks for having me on. I mean, you guys are fun to talk to, and with all the groans, you know, I made during the last hour, I do feel like you guys are great to talk to, so that helps for sure. If you guys, if you guys were bad to talk to, it'd be a different story. But I had a good time, and thanks for having me on.
And hey, and I really like Matrix Reloaded now. So
no, see, there you go.
There's
so,
a win for you.
Yes. You can't. I'm so excited every time somebody says that, or I see that tweeted. Like, you know, they're on board with like those sequels. Like, yes, good. Something good's coming out of this.
But hey, I saw Animatrix for the first time, and it's my second favorite in the Matrix
series.
There you
go. Good. Win-win. I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it. But thank you. Yeah, you can find me over at Talk Film Society, talkfilmsociety.com. And go to our Patreon, patreon.com/talkfilmsociety. We're cooking up some good stuff for January 2022. So check that out. And listen to our series on Richard Kelly, Have a Nice Apocalypse. And also check out, there's a new episode of It Pod to Be You coming out pretty soon. So check that out. Manish Mathur is covering West Side Story for that series. But yeah, that's
buddy
it.
Manish.
Yeah.
Manish has been on our Hitchcock podcast quite a few times.
Yeah.
Love talking with Manish. He's a good podcaster.
Yeah.
Excellent. Zach, where can people find you when you're not taking too many red pills?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreUNZACH. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Well in Smallville. We talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show. But another guy who should be able to fly, who can't fly. So there's a little connection for you as far as this movie goes. You can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. And then I host another podcast here on the network, Sasswatch, monthly podcast for me and Ken Tripp, talking about the cultural phenomena of Bigfoot and multimedia. You can find us on Twitter at Sasswatch Pod.
Excellent. And as for me, you can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me here on the network with another show called Infinite Diversity, which is all about new Star Trek. And I'm very thrilled to hear that they've just delayed. They put a mid-season break in Star Trek Discovery Season 4, so they're not doubling up a bunch of episodes with Star Trek Prodigy. It's going to be just one a week. I'm so happy. So you find me there talking Star Trek, new Star Trek. And you can find me over on Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock Podcast, which covers all of Hitch's films in chronological order. And coming out right away is our episode on Psycho. And I think it's a good discussion. I think we had a good time on that one. So, well, that's it. That's all we got for you this time. Next week, we'll be back with a recap. But the week after that, we'll be starting a whole new franchise with Zach's first time coverage of the Scream franchise. So until then, what's your favorite scary movie, Zach?
Halloween.
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.